Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I present guests who are really at the cutting edge of a whole spiritual revolution that's happening in this country, and that's taking place in many different ways, and particularly tonight's show is about creativity, and I've done a few shows in the past on creativity, and this one, I am hoping for some personal revelations. Tonight's guest is Ann Paris, and she wrote a book called Standing at the Water's Edge, and she is a clinical psychologist specializing in helping artists and other creative people reach their potential. So, Ann, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Alan.
Hi. There's so many things I want to talk to you about, because I really like the overview you took in your book. And the main thing, as far as I'm concerned personally, is I know I'm creative. I know I have a lot to say once I sit down and do it, but I get stuck between the mind and the actual putting the thoughts down on paper, writing, you know, I'm trying to write a project. And so I feel like there's not a block in creativity, just a block in the application of that. Is that common?
Oh, my gosh, certainly is. I think most every artist and other creative person that has come in to see me has described similar experience. I think it's very common and well known among creative types.
Well, can you help me and everyone else? I mean, what can you tell me?
Well, gosh, I think that, you know, I think that the whole understanding about what makes it so hard sometimes really deserved a lot more attention and respect than I have seen, you know, in other places. I think that a lot of books or people will recommend that you, you know, set a discipline for yourself, set a time of day, tell yourself positive thoughts that you can do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the people that I've worked with have said, well, it just isn't that easy. If it was that easy, I would do it.
Well, it's true. It's not that easy. And I know I'm really putting things off when I start to do my laundry, because I hate doing my laundry. And when I find myself compelled to do the laundry, I know, like, wow, this is a major avoidance. So, my real.
I think that if we can really, you know, understand to dive into that creative space that is very uncertain, we don't know if we're even going to be able to do it. We don't know that if we do sit down at that blank page, if anything is going to come out.
Well, that's not my problem. I mean, I know things are coming. They're bubbling up to come. I mean, I scratch on a little scrap paper. It's just sitting down at the computer and putting everything I've accumulated into a kind of formalized structure. That's my problem. I mean, is that...
For me, I know that it would cause great anxieties to swell up in me as I sat there, even if I had an idea of what I wanted to communicate. But I think it's very common. And how I've described that challenge is one to immerse and to allow oneself to immerse into that experience, that internal state of just really being open to letting the words flow or letting the images come without really knowing where that's going to lead us. I think can cause considerable fear.
Well, but how do I put those images and words in? How do I get myself to translate that? Because they do into this project I'm trying to complete. Really, I mean, you know,
start by saying that, you know, if we can recognize that it's really that fear that we're struggling with, and it's not some defect in ourself, but that it really is a scary thing to do, and that if we can, when we're in that state of immersion, we are feeling totally at one with the project.
Right.
We're feeling at one with the words or the medium, and really outside of that self-evaluative kind of position with ourselves.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, it's a lot of the fears that, you know, we're not going to be able to do it well enough, or we're going to
right. I guess that's part of it. Yes.
Fail others or fail ourselves and our own ideas of what we think it should be. But when we can kind of, you know, set all of that aside and just immerse ourselves into the project and make immersion the goal, make a connection with that project the goal, and be curious. To take an area of curiosity, you know, of I wonder what's going to emerge in this moment if I immerse into it. Almost as if we're as much a spectator of the process as we are the guider of it. That the you know, in your case, the writing, that the words, the ideas almost take on a life of their own, and if we can connect with the art, and start to have a mutual kind of back and forth relationship with it, that I think we can get past a lot of those self doubts and fears that keep us from diving in.
So it's basically fear that's keeping people, the fear, like just to reiterate, of a failure. So people just don't try because they say, oh, what's the use? So it's like we have to change this inner dialogue in ourselves. Would you say that? I mean, we have to talk to ourselves differently.
Talk to ourselves differently, maybe understand ourselves differently.
Uh-huh.
Most of the artists that I've seen have, you know, explanations for their procrastination or their blocks by saying that they're just very distractible, or they're not very focused. Or maybe,
well, that's me. I'm very distractible. But you're saying underneath that is a fear. Is that what you're saying underneath the distraction?
I think that the way that people tend to understand the procrastination is by blaming themselves.
Oh.
And being a weakness in themselves.
Oh, I do that, yes.
Yes, there's something must be really wrong with me.
So what?
So
what's another way of dealing with procrastination?
Well, I think that if we can be a little bit more understanding and empathic, that this really is a frightening thing that we're sitting down to do, because to create means to kind of invest your total self in it, and that we're really, you know, laying ourselves out there with this belief and hope that someone's going to get it, they're going to, you know, appreciate what we're offering, it's going to impact them in some way, or, you know, that we're really going to be ultimately connecting with other people through this piece of work.
Right.
You know, I think that can be very frightening, that people may not, you know, give us the response that we hope for, or you know, maybe it's not going to impact people the way that we hope it will.
All great art does challenge people anyway. You know, all the greatest painters, Van Gogh, they challenged the way people looked at the world. People didn't get it, and it didn't stop some of those great artists from creating, you know.
Well, and I think that, you know, that is true. I would just really wonder about some of the great artists that it looks to us like maybe they didn't get positive response much at all.
Yeah.
But I would wonder in their personal worlds, you know, if there wasn't at least one person that really got how, you know, cutting edge they were being. And that really, you know, those people, I think, really give us the fuel and the strength to take those risks.
Right. So we need can have you say part of the immersion is to immerse ourselves in a community, in a sense, a group of people that support us.
Yes. And I think that this, you know, is very different from the typical idea we have about being solitary artists, and that, you know, I'm saying I think that all people, not only artists, but as human beings, we really don't exist or create in a vacuum, that we really do need supportive relationships around us that help to give us the strength to even start each day and dive in again, you know, the next
So
day.
How would we do, I mean, would you suggest like writing colonies or artist colonies or just collective living?
I think those are wonderful places, you know, online communities now have a lot to offer. I think that there's three different types of relationships that really can help us along, and I outline these in the book. The first type are mirrors,
mm-hmm.
and those are people who, yeah, they see our talent, they see what we're trying to do, they see us as special, and, you know, they really do give us that strength and confidence to keep at it.
Mm.
Another type are heroes, and those are people that we look up to, we admire, we want to be like them, we want to please them.
Mm.
And they can be either, you know, real life heroes, like my dad was very much that figure for me, but I think they can even be idols.
Well, like Einstein said, you have to, you can, the best thing in the world to do is what's barely possible to achieve. There's some quote like that. And that's something that I, like, look to that quote. I mean, do you know you're on track when you can, you know, going for a kind of a new expression of ideas, basically.
Oh, and really having to stretch to do that, really.
Yes, yes, those are the most worthwhile things. And they're also the most, in a way, difficult. So there's mirrors and heroes, and what's the third thing?
And then the third are twins, and those are people that are like us. They're doing the same thing. They're struggling with the same things.
Mm.
And that's where I think, you know, people in writers' colonies or other, you know, classes that you might take, that you find people that are in the same boat, and there can be a lot of comfort in that, and in seeing that, you know, what you're going through and feeling is very understandable, and other people totally get it because they're in the same boat.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you need those three types, or would you say just one of those three, or all three?
Boy, I think, I mean, when you have all three, you know, that you can really be working at your best.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, people who have none of those are really in a vulnerable position, and you know, that's when I think people can become depressed or give up or, you know, become very anxious.
I mean, this really does change the whole idea of the artist as this lonely, isolated person that must, you know, struggle with their own inner demons and community. I mean, this is a whole new way of looking at
yeah,
the creative act.
It really is, and in fact, it I'm just applying these ideas to creativity. This is a whole kind of new wave and movement in psychology in general, that we're appreciating more and more that we really aren't these independent, self-sufficient people walking around, but that you know, we are really constantly gauging our sense of being in connection with others, moment to moment.
Well, how do you apply it to things outside of creativity, and how are you applying it to psychology, these concepts?
Oh, I think in, you know, really any kind of pursuit, in any kind of in our careers, in our relationships, and love, and marriage, that it really does matter if we're getting what kind of response we're getting from other people.
So you're saying community in general is sort of our next wave of evolution. Would you say that?
Yep. Next wave of understanding our evolution. I think that it's always been there, but that we've really dismissed it and even in our culture looked at it as weak or inadequate, you know, the idea that it shouldn't matter to us what other people think. You know, we should have enough self-confidence to, you know, barrel through. And I think it's just not true. I think it does matter to us what other people, how they see us.
It does matter, but the downside of that as an artist is that perhaps we would compromise what we really want to say because of what other people would think, and that's, you know, not true to the deep creative process. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. Yeah. And that, you know, that would be the risk, I think, is that we would start to really tailor our our inner creative drive towards the wrong thing.
Right. So how do we connect with people? I guess it's being supportive. We support each other, but we don't compromise our own integrity. Would you say that?
And I think it's about finding a balance, you know, that on the one hand we want to, you know, feel our individual self in our art in a very complete way and on the other hand, that we also need to take in our audience into account, and that, you know, we do want to speak to them and with them through our art. I think that when we really find that immersive space of creativity, that an audience or the reader or the, you know, the listener of the music, they feel that and they feel that they get immersed in the art with us.
Yeah, go ahead. Continue on.
Let's see. That I think that through our creating that what we're really hoping to do is to connect with the audience, and that's our goal, to connect with them and to kind of invite them into our immersive state with the art, and that's, I think, where gripping art happens for other people, that they experience it.
So, like, this immersive state is a very interesting place because it's a sort of a non-ego place in a way, right? Rollo May, you quote here, in The Courage to Create, calls genuine creativity. So it's that, and you say it's a genuine creativity as involving an act of encounter. Now, how do you describe that encounter?
I think that, that quote was talking about having an encounter with the artwork, where, you know, again, the artwork almost has a life of its own, even though it may be very unformed, and seeing it that I'm going to have a relationship with this piece of art, and that it's going to be a very mutual one. It's going to move me along as much as I move it along. And it's a very feeling of that one with the art.
So it is a non-ego state in a way.
Right.
So the big question is, where do you think inspiration and creativity comes from? Where does it arise from?
I think it comes from the state of immersion. Have immersive experiences in a lot of different realms in our life. We can feel that kind of immersive connection and spirituality.
Well, describe specifically what, Like, give me a specific understanding of an immersed experience that you may have had.
Well, let's see. I mean, I guess right off the bat, I think of when I was writing the book, that, you know, those wonderful times that we all hope for, where I would sit down and the words would flow out of me almost without effort, and that I almost felt like I was along for the ride, and that I would lose sense of time. Mm-hmm. I would lose a sense of what was going on around me, but that I was just so at one with the ideas, with the writing, that I almost felt like I lost myself in that moment, but at the same time felt like I have never had a more clear experience of myself. Kind of losing and gaining yourself in that same moment.
Well, people say that's what an enlightened experience is, you know, a waking up to your true self.
And I think that yeah, that we can experience that in spiritual ways. I think that, you know, we can experience it sometimes in play or in athletic pursuits or in loving relationships. But it's that space of letting down kind of all of that ego, that self-protective, you know, shields that we've got up, and just totally investing ourselves in it.
Right. We probably experience it more than we realize, because actually when we're experiencing it, we're not even realizing we're experiencing it. It's only afterwards sometimes we realize we were immersed, right?
Yeah, because when you're immersed, you're really not outside of yourself kind of observing yourself. You're just in it. So, yeah, you look back and you go, wow. I was really...
Do you get into the whole left brain, right brain thing, where creativity comes from the right brain and tries to communicate it to the left brain to express it? Have you studied that at all?
I really haven't. I've been more... more concerned with the idea of the self, you know, our sense of ourself through the process, in a more complete way. I think there's some really fascinating research and studies going on in neuroscience and the you know, is focusing on what does happen in our brains and in fact a lot of that research is supporting this idea about the importance of connection. One of the pieces that I've known about is that they take PET scans of the brain, which are kind of lighted moving pictures of the brain as we do different things. And what they found is that when a person is connected with another person, feels connected with another person, that all kinds of different areas in their brain light up. And these areas control thinking, imagination, motivation to act, and that really it's showing that when we're in a state of connection, our brain is really primed to be at its best.
Right.
And
so that's
when we're isolated.
Not when we're isolated, so when we're feeling connected to community and to nature and to ourselves, you know. But why does creativity sometimes happen, like, you know, for me in the middle of the night as I'm falling off to sleep, maybe I'm more relaxed, you know. You know those moments when the muse strikes? What do you think is that's the reason for that?
I've certainly experienced that too, and I've heard a lot of artists talk about that they keep a paper and, you know, pencil beside their bed because that it strikes them. And my guess is that we are more relaxed, that we have let down our guard, and that we're kind of more open to you know, ideas being kind of channeled through us or coming to us in that state.
Right. I think there is something to that. And, you know, a lot of research I've done on creativity and imagination that no one can really describe where new ideas come from. They sort of come out of the unknown, out of nowhere. Right? I mean, they just kind of...
Often it's when we're thinking about something else.
Yeah.
Or, you know, certainly not pressuring ourselves to come up with this idea. You know, I think there is a lot of mystery about it, about how it really does happen, but it's certainly a common occurrence. And I would say that, you know, that you're just... And often it's in that state in between, kind of in between being awake and asleep.
What I like about the book is how you talk about, you know, the actual deepening your creative process. You talk about the photographer that, you know, shifted from wanting to control things to immersing herself in the experience and then letting something else come through, like a higher part of ourselves take over. So the ego gets out of the way, and then when we immerse ourselves, there's the deeper, more essential part of ourselves comes through.
Right. And it's very internal. You know, it could look the same to someone on the outside, but we know internally when we're immersed in something, and when, you know, at other times we're trying to force it, or we're really are kind of watching ourselves, and we just don't feel that flow of connection with the other.
So why did you call the book Standing at the Water's Edge?
Well, I came up with that title about halfway through writing the book, and it came out of my so common experience of having cleared out a few hours in my schedule to write, and then sitting there and feeling this wave of anxiety, and that I really felt like I was standing on a cliff, and that, you know, I needed to dive into this thing, and all of the hopes and fears that moment brought up. But it really felt like I was standing at water's edge, and that came to me then in one of those moments.
So it's standing at the water's edge is like before you immerse yourself, you're there, you know, and then you sort of have to make the leap into what it is you're working on.
Right.
You know, part of my problem, I think, is I'm trying to do too many creative projects at once. Or would you say that's okay, or would you say to narrow it down to one at a time?
Well, I think, you know, people have a lot of different ways, I think, of dealing with that. Some people find that they can only focus on one thing, and if they try to get too much going, that they really don't do anything on any of them. But by and large, one of the ideas I have in this book is that this experience of immersion is so primal to us as humans, and that we really seek it, we're really longing for that, and that we look for it in a lot of different places. When we can experience it, it's a transformative, kind of strengthening experience to have, and we come out of it a little bit stronger. And so my idea with this is that when we are immersed in our creative pursuit, and we disengage for whatever reason from that it's wonderful to have another pursuit to turn to immerse into for strength. For some people it's another project, for some people it would be, you know, turning to their spiritual connection. For some people, it's turning to other people's art and immersing in other artists.
You mean
work.
As a break from what we're doing, to kind of step back and take a little breath away? Is that what you're saying?
As a break, but also as a place to find strength then to turn back to the project.
Oh.
So if we can immerse in someone else's work, often we find our own creativity then, feeling stronger, like we can go back to our project and work.
Well, that's true, because I'm writing, I'm reading a lot of writers, and I'm actually stimulated by their ideas in particular fields that then stimulate new ideas in me. So I'm very much, I think that's absolutely true that we do that. I'm also interested, because you have a lot of references in your book. What's like one of the things that really inspired you, like one piece of writing or poetry that kept you on track?
Oh, boy. Well, I say in my book that I think one of my heroes and idols is Peter Gabriel and his music.
Uh-huh.
And I've listened to him for most of my life, I think, and I've been a dancer, and that I would consistently, turn to that. I mean, when, I'd be stuck or disengaged from my writing, I would put on, some of his music and would dance to it or imagine dancing to it, and that often I would then feel re-inspired and re-strengthened to do my work.
Because the music sort of relaxed your mind a little more, or?
Because I think I could immerse in it.
Mm. Oh, in the music you immerse and then came back to immerse in your work.
Right.
Well, the other thing that I want to get back to is you're saying don't give ourselves a hard time if we happen to, like, be procrastinating. We don't, it's whatever, it's okay, just become more conscious of it. I mean, I'm trying to get that one.
Okay, yeah, it's a little, what I mean by that is that often what we view as procrastination are these other things that we're turning to immerse into, to hopefully get strength then to turn back to our work. A lot of people describe that, and they'll say like, well, instead of working on my painting, I procrastinated and I went to the art museum. And when really, they had an immersive experience at the art museum. They could get into someone else's work and they could feel strengthened from that immersive experience and then be able to go back and do their own work.
Uh-huh.
And so it really wasn't procrastination. It was really something that they needed to do. They needed to feel immersed in something else first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, another way to look at it I had the cleanest house and my yard would look beautiful when I was writing this book.
Uh-huh.
Because I did so much of that first. But for me, it was always like, I had to get everything taken care of around me so that I could have this idea that if I got immersed, I did not want to have to stop and do the laundry. That I wanted to make a space for it, and I didn't know how long I'd be in that space. So I really kind of cleared the decks for myself, and that helped me to feel, okay, now I'm really free to, see what happens here.
Well, thank you. That helps me, because oftentimes I feel I am procrastinating if I tend to do what's in front of me because I know this project is, I mean, I need like a couple of months not seeing anybody, or kind of just going into it. I know
right.
That's, and so I
right.
know these little things need to be taken care of, and so I think you're saying it's okay.
Yeah, and that you may need to do that, and really that to see that you're, in fact, it is part of the creative process. It's not just a procrastination or distraction, but it really is part of kind of preparing yourself to take this dive.
Yeah, this dive is immersive. Do you know of the book called The War of Art?
I've I don't know it real well. I breeze through it, but it talks about a similar kind of struggle, doesn't it?
It does. It does. They just say, just do it. Just sit down. Just do it. Just
right.
Just
right.
And I think you're a little more, I don't know, kinder somehow.
I just think that, you know, it's easier said than done to just sit down and do it. And, you know, I think having other people around us that get it and appreciate, you know, what it is that we're doing can really be all the difference.
I think you're right. I'm going to do that. That really is help. A mirror, a hero, and a twin, I think they're really... and we're good for each other, you know. I'm good for those people as well, you know.
Oh yeah. I think being a mirror, being a hero, and being a twin to someone else can not only be very gratifying for us, but that it really can set up a mutual relationship that you can help each other.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that, you know, that you are changing this idea of what an artist is, in a sense, where it's where art comes from isolation and frustration, and you're kind of talking more about a collective experience, in a sense, a group mind. Would you go that far to say that?
It could be. I guess I would go so far, though, as to say that I think that we create and we have a desire to create in order to connect with people.
I don't know if that's where our desire to create. I think, and this is my own theory, that we create in order to understand the world. It's a way of reinterpreting the world, and yes, then I think we want to communicate our interpretations of the world to other people. But for me, that initial burst is because I'm trying. Art is a way of recreating what's in our deep awareness.
I think that's very profound.
Yeah.
And then the next step, though, is that we do want someone to get it.
Absolutely, yes. We want to share our interpretations of reality with other people. That is why, you know, we put it out there. I mean, we're all doing that in our heads all the time. You know, everybody's an artist in imagination world dreaming, but the artist is one who then, yes, I agree with you, who has the urge to communicate those visions to others.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is a way of, another way of feeling in connection with people I think that's just a very primary need that we have.
It is. And the spiritual side of it, too, it's because I think art does come from a divine realm, in a sense. It doesn't come from the ego place. That's what you say here is more the escapist art as opposed to what, genuine art, you know. Genuine art really comes from something beyond ourselves.
Right.
And that's the spiritual connection. The escapist art comes from an ego-based, it was like that awful communist propaganda art in the, you know, in the 60s from Russia. I mean, it was art.
Sure.
I think political theater kind of is too, it doesn't leave enough, that genuine quality. It's forced, you know?
Forced and more driven by formula or audience demand. You know, you're merely would be merely just fulfilling a formula,
right.
Rather than coming up
right.
with.
And it doesn't have that immersion feeling to it. And I think the thing about immersion, if you study Freudian theory, he calls that oceanic feeling that. Fetal consciousness, doesn't he? Have you studied Freudian?
Yeah. And that, I think is a good description, that oceanic kind of bliss being merged with. Although Freud saw it as a sign of sickness.
He did?
Yeah, I mean that it was kind of part of this primary part of our brain that wasn't yet controlled by the ego.
Oh.
And that it needed to be, you know, tamed and channeled into, you know, certain socially acceptable ways. And,
oh.
And I think that this is beyond that, saying that, no, that's the forward edge of ourself that is reaching forward and reaching beyond, and has hope, you know, of being heard and appreciated, and it's the highest form of ourselves.
Well, you know who I think goes there is the, you ever hear of The Hidden Order of Art, that book by Anton Ehrenzweig? Have you heard of
him? Yes, yes.
He goes beyond that Freudian theory and goes back to that sense of holistic self in that artistic immersion process.
Oh, I think it's a state that's been described with many different words, flow, you know, in the zone, that we all know it. You know, we all know what that state feels like, and we long for it, and, you know, it's really a healthy part of ourselves that, you know, stretches for it. But, boy, are there a lot of blocks that can get in the way of allowing it to happen.
So if you work as a clinical psychologist, if someone comes to you and says, help me, what, I mean, you talk about the hero, the mirror, the twin, but how, when do you get the people started in your own, you know, practical work?
One of the interesting things that I found, too, is that in the absence of real relationships in a person's life, you know, many of these artists are pretty socially isolated people. And they don't have mirrors, heroes, and twins.
Right.
And so part of our work is looking at, you know, what kinds of things get in their way of making those kinds of connections with people. But a lot of it can be done in imagination. And that it's okay to, you know, imagine and fantasize an audience who loves you, an appreciative audience. It's okay to fantasize that your hero is going to see your work and like your work.
But it's probably better to have real people, or does it not matter? Am I being too practical?
Oh, I think in the bigger context, you know, the more people that you can have that serve those kinds of functions for you, the better. We all need people all along. But I think imagination can be a really powerful piece, too, to help spur us past some of those fears.
I mean, if we get too close, though, to these other people, do we have a fear, let's say, of letting someone else down if we can't fulfill, you know, our, you know, what we set out to do? So how do you deal with that?
Well, a lot of those fears are our assumptions about what other people are going to think or do. And I think that those assumptions are built, you know, from a lifetime of our lived experience with other people. If we experienced early on that, you know, those around us did not appreciate what we were doing, they you know, didn't let us know that they thought we could do it, or, you know, they believed in us, you know, I think that we all are kind of assume that that's how everyone's going to react to us. So we isolate and we don't reach for support. We don't ask for it. So we're really confronting
a lot of our fears
about relationships when we're, you know, trying to be creative, and whether or not we feel like we can risk even reaching for the relationships to help us. Do you know
so
what, I
what
mean?
Do we do? Yeah.
Well, I think to awareness, first of all, of, you know, how we may be thinking about other people and what our base assumptions are, and then doing some reality checks and you know, asking someone, you know, is this, you know, I'm concerned you're not going to, you know, appreciate what I'm doing, but I'd like your feedback anyway. I'm kind of taking that little risk to hopefully get a better response. And again, the imagination. One woman I think of that is a very famous author now, but she described when she has to get up to give a talk that she always pulls up in her mind this one talk she had given 20 years ago where the audience was particularly receptive and, whistling and applauding, and she pulls that up in her mind before she on stage, and that gives her the confidence and the strength to go out and, you know, give her talk.
You know, that's a really good point, because I gave a talk that was just very appreciated, and it was actually a eulogy for my father, and it's just like, for, you know, everyone was so with me, not that, but when I give talks, I think of the feeling of the audience being really with me in that same way, and they sort of get that as well, you know?
Yeah, so it makes all the difference.
That's a really good example of how to overcome certain levels. Now, but in your personal practice as a clinical psychologist, do you do other things as well as this kind of coaching?
Oh yeah. A lot of work that I've done has been with people coming in, not saying, okay, my problem is that I'm blocked here, can't do my art. But they come in because of, you know, other situations in their life. But the
divorce, breakup, whatever.
But yeah. That whenever, we get to know each other and, you know, so many people say, oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, right, I have trouble with following through on my creative ideas and it's really a part of so many people, I think, this longing, wish to be creative and actually produce something from it.
I think it's a major need we have to be. I mean, it's part of the human experience, creativity.
Yeah.
So after they get through some of their initial stuff, you introduce these concepts to people. Is that it?
I don't really kind of introduce it, but it's certainly my way of appreciating people and so kind of within the context of whatever they're talking about, I listen with this ear, you know, and so I may focus on things that another person may not focus on, but I think that we're all seeking immersive experiences in a lot of ways, and when, you know, for whatever reasons have blocked us from being able to take the dive, I think we suffer.
Mm.
And I try to help people to immerse in whatever their wish to immerse in is.
Can we live a totally immersed life? I mean, is that a possibility? Could you be that all the time?
Oh, I think that would cross over into the experience of madness. You know, I mean, that naturally we just, you know, we do have to step back from it and come back to kind of ourselves, and uh-huh. In that space, you know, we can feel very gratified for what we've done, or often we can feel very vulnerable and like, oh my gosh, I who am I to think that I can do this, and have all kinds of self-doubts and really wrestle with it. And there, too, I think, you know, that's where we need to be able to turn to other people to get strength and inspired and comforted.
So do you have groups? Do you have, like, something that you've formed around your work?
Well, no. I mean, I've run a lot of different groups. with various focuses, but right now I don't have any groups going. I am hoping that my website would become a kind of gathering place. I've got a forum on there that artists can, or other people, you know, can post and get to know each other and hopefully serve as mirrors, heroes, and twins for each other.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah, that's website annparis.com. It's ANNEParis.com. And that would be good because I think forming groups, giving more talks about this work is important for people because I think we're moving into a time of more creativity being acknowledged more as a more valuable part of who we are.
I do too. Feel that happening, and I think that what I'm suggesting is quite a shift, though, for people to make from, you know, feeling like, you know, that they've just got to try to dig deeper within themselves to find the strength or the discipline to complete a work of art, and shifting from that mindset to looking outside of themselves and, you know, the nature of their relationships, and am I getting what I need, you know, and how do I create and make relationships with people that really end up, you know, giving me what I need and allow me to give back. I think that's a big shift.
Like a relationship based around creativity, you're saying that way, right?
Creativity or really anything. You know, sometimes I can feel very strengthened by, you know, my husband appreciating if he's, you know, being a mirror to me, that appreciating my dance, but I find that strengthens me to write. Or something else, you know.
What if, though, let's say you're being a mirror for someone and you really don't like what they're doing, would you tell them or you'd be more constructive?
What I found for myself is that I really need to first hear what someone does like about it. And then I can feel kind of more resilient to listen to any criticism and really be able to take that in and hear it rather than just dismiss it or feel totally crushed by it. I think criticism, you know, it's a sensitive thing when we share our artwork with someone, and we really are in a sensitive place, and I think, you know, first to hear what's good about it, then to listen to the criticism, I think we can manage it a lot easier.
Or criticism, not even as this is bad, but this is how it could be better, or this is how I see the possibilities of this work, you know, going forward. It's just, you know, maybe that's more on track, right?
Yeah. Oh, that would be a great way to phrase it, too.
Not
as a negative thing, but here's some additional ideas.
Well, we're almost out of time, Anne. It's been nice talking to you. What would you like to leave people with? What kind of ideas about immersion and creativity?
Well, I guess, you know, the main message would be that you don't have to do it alone, and in fact, you know, most of us can't do it alone, and that it's not weakness or inadequacy to reach to other people and really put energy into those connections that are going to help you in the long run with your own art.
Wow, that's very helpful for me, actually, to know, because I've been giving myself a hard time about certain projects. So thank you Anne.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a delight.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed you in New York last time, but next time we'll do some television as well. So you're located in Cincinnati?
I'm in Cincinnati, right.
I've never been to Cincinnati, actually. Okay. You're at the Cincinnati Center for Self Psychology, is that your...
Well, that's my that was a training center that we developed, but and it is actually kind of in the space that we are in, but we don't really call ourselves that. We're independent.
Thank you.
But, yeah. Thank you, Alan, and good luck with your projects.
Thank you. I'll be in touch about that. Okay. I've been talking to Dr. Ann Paris, who's the author of Standing at the Water's Edge, Moving Past the Pitfalls and Into the Power of Creative Immersion. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. You can listen to these programs on newrealities.com or on the BBS.com archive website under New Realities. I have lots of interesting programs along these lines, and science, and art, and sexuality, and consciousness. So please look at that. And hope to hear from you. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you for listening. This is Alan Steinfeld, newrealities.com. Thank you.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.